looking at something I've called the big scam. So we'll just read a good piece of the story, then we'll go back and comment on it. It's from Joshua 9, verses 1 to 15. And it came to pass when all the kings who were on this side of the Jordan in the hills and in the lowland and in the coast of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite heard about it. Heard about what? Heard about what happened in Jericho and heard about what happened in Ai. But when the inhabitants, that they gathered together to fight with Joshua and Israel with one accord. But when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they worked craftily and went and pretended to be ambassadors, and they took old sacks on their donkeys, old wine skins torn and mended, old and patched sandals on their feet, and old garments on themselves, and all the bread of their provision was dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua, to the camp at Gilgal, and said to him, and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country. Now therefore make a covenant with us." Then the men of Israel said to the Hivites, "Perhaps you dwell among us, so how can we make a covenant with you?" But they said to Joshua, "We are your servants." And Joshua said to them, "Who are you, and where do you come from?" So they said to him, "From a very far country. Your servants have come because of the name of the Lord your God. For we have heard of his fame and all that he did in Egypt and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon king of Heshbon and Og king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth. Therefore our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, 'Take provision with you for the journey, and go to meet with them, and say to them, We are your servants. Now, therefore, make a covenant with us. This bread of ours we took hot for our provision from our houses on the day that we departed to come to you. But now look, it's dry and moldy. And these wineskins which we filled were new, and see, they are torn. And these old garments and our sandals have become old because they are a very, very long journey.' Then the men of Israel took some of their provisions, but they did not ask counsel of the Lord. So Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and the rulers of the congregation swore to them." Now you've probably heard this story over and over, and I'm not about to tell you something new, but I was thinking this morning about that my job can be rather repetitious, but it's so that we can be reminded. Because we go through different situations and different stages of life, and without that regular reminder, we will wander. It is a guarantee we will wander. There's a streak to us that does that. So this is a reminder, but maybe you'll learn some new things as well. So the people of the land heard about the great rally that Israel had enjoyed between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Remember that? We looked at that a couple of weeks ago. They went through the commandments of the Lord, and they were had the priests there, and the ark was there. They rallied their troops. And so these people here, from this land, the Gibeonites, had rallied their troops, and they were going to come against them. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 12, reveals something that they knew of Israel and why they were speaking like this, why they would try this trick. Deuteronomy 20, verses 10 to 12, and it reads, "When you go near a city to fight against it, then proclaim an offering of peace to it. And it shall be that if they accept your offer of peace and open to you, then all the people who are found in it shall be placed under tribute to you and serve you." Now, don't mistake that was for the inhabitants of Canaan. It wasn't. Verse 12 says, "Now if the city will not make peace with you, but makes war against you, then you shall escape and besiege it." Now go over to Deuteronomy chapter 20 and verses 15 to 18. "Thus you shall do to all the cities which are very far from you, which are not of the cities of these nations. But of the cities," see, you let those people go if they're very far away, "but of the cities of these people which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance, you shall let nothing that breathes remain alive." And you can finish those verses if you like. Well, this is terrible. Who would serve a God like this? We went over this, right? It went back way back, and he told He told Abraham, I'm going to give you this promised land, but not right now, in the generations to come. Actually, it was some 400 years later that happened. But the reason was the iniquity of the Amorites was not filled. What does that mean? God gives you every last chance to turn around and get it right. But there is an end to that. There is an end to that. That's why I have a silly little phrase of, don't play games with God, because if you do, you will lose. We don't know where that line is, but this was the line. The time had come. The time had come. Actually, it was more than 400 years. There were 40 years in the wilderness, and then 400 years as a nation, and then they came, yeah, or a nation, and then, I got that backwards, sorry. 400 years as a nation, and then 40 years in the wilderness. In Joshua 9:11, the Gibeonites asked Israel to make a covenant with them to not harm them. The reply to the Gibeonites should have been, if you are not from around here, you have nothing to fear. And they said that at one point, but then they believed the story. They believed the story. But if you're from around here, you will actually perish. We should ask God if somebody's telling us the truth or not. Should always in everything be a bit suspect. I counseled a married couple for too long, and it just was going nowhere. And you know where it ended? I had to say to them, I don't know who's lying here, but somebody's not telling the truth. And I do not have a solution for you. There's nowhere else to go. All the time I'm saying, Lord, what's going on? And that's the only conclusion I came to. They both say, oh no, yet nothing changed. Somebody's not dealing with the truth. And especially in a case like this, we need to know. Somebody comes to you for advice, you need to know if they're dealing in the truth or not, or if it's just a setup. Jesus was set up all over the place. But he knew when they were telling the truth and when they weren't. Joshua 9:15. Thus you shall do to the cities that are very far from you, which are not of the cities around you. So James 5:12, he gives us a bit of an update, a bit of a today take on this thing. And he says, do not swear either by heaven or by earth. Oh, pardon me, that was Joshua 1:9 I need. Joshua 9:15. So Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and to the rulers of the congregation, swore to them. So I brought this in for relevance to today. James 5:12. Do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, lest you fall into judgment. So there was no need to make a covenant, no need to swear an oath. If you're from around here, sorry, your time's up. If you're from far away, we won't bother you. And just left it like that. But oh no, they made these big promises and we'll never do this and we'll never do that. All that kind of silliness. When I hear a person talking and they're telling me different things, and then somewhere in that conversation they say, honest, I'm wondering right away, okay, how much of what you just said before is not honest? If you have to qualify your speech, there may be ulterior motives in it. So you got to watch that. So what happened then? They made this covenant. So they had a potluck dinner together without even consulting the Lord. That's what you do, right? You sit together, you have a meal, and especially back then, that meant a lot. When you sat down with somebody and had a meal, especially if you shared your food. So obviously this is not about potluck dinners. Although I'd like to say, in regards to the men's breakfast, that bacon is good and broccoli is evil. Just so you know. The tradition of the day would mean that the meal they shared would contain bread and salt. It's part of what they had at their meals. We have it too. Bread was seen and celebrated by the Israelites as a sign of God's provision. They had some where they carried the Ten Commandments, in the ark. Aaron's bud, manna. He gave them manna in the wilderness. But Jesus said, himself, "I am the bread of life," John 6:35. So that's just significant. That's a symbol. I want you to think of symbols as I'm speaking here. Burnt offerings are a sign of devotion and commitment to God. Israel carried out this offering to God during their big rally just previously, before the Gibeonites showed up. Burnt offerings were never to be offered without salt. Salt is a sign of sincerity. So they've locked horns without checking out the details. When I get a loan, or I've gotten a loan for a mortgage or whatever, and they tell me how much what the interest rate is, and they'll tell me how much it is a month, and they never tell you unless you ask you, how much is this loan going to cost me? How much is this going to cost me? Because I want to know dollars and cents over whatever period of time. I want to know how much it's going to cost. So they never checked this out very closely. And they were connecting to something that would cost them a lot. I said to a fellow one time, he was going to buy himself a brand new truck, and he was telling about how much money he was going to make and all this. And I said, so how much is this going to cost you? And he went into telling me the price of the truck. And I said, no, you're a family man. If you're driving all across Canada, even Alberta, BC, or wherever, how much is this going to cost your family? How long are you going to be gone? How much are these things that we make agreements with other people, what are they going to cost us? We live in a Facebook age, which I use Facebook too. But we live in that age and you just blow it off. There's no commitment. You just look and you laugh and you post and that's it. It's not real life. But we live in a real life. And everything that we make a commitment to, we need to follow through. Otherwise, we become unbelievable believers. That's nasty. I like believable believers. Unbelievable believers, I don't trust. So that's why, you know, you think me a little crazy, but people tell me they're a believer. My first thought is prove it. And I watch for a while to see how they live. It doesn't matter if they're not. I'm not going to condemn them. But if they're not, really, or they're an unbelievable believer, I won't be making covenants with them. It'll be a little different relationship. We need to have that kind of discretion. So here is the people who just came back from an amazing celebration of God's Word and people's commitment to it, Joshua 8, verses 30 to 34, and they are having a potluck dinner with an army of deceptive Amorites whose intention was to weasel out of God's will. Oh, man, what a mess! What a mess. So, how did all this happen? And it happened so quickly, on the heels of revival, so to speak. We must be careful to never mistake the depth of our convictions for their accuracy. Don't mistake the depth of your convictions for your accuracy. We get excited about a good many things on a good many occasions. Often we'll tag God's name on it, and it's not been looked into. Maybe God's never been consulted. It must be God. I'm feeling the hair come up on the back of my neck. No, I felt that when God walked into the room. But I don't take that as a sign that God walked into the room. It goes deeper than that. Much deeper than that. We need to be a little more careful. Satan, our sure enemy, through Jesus' sincere obedience to the Father, became our defeated foe. If we wish his involvement to stay there as a defeated foe, we need to be careful and intentional with the choices that we make. Every time you make a turn, you have the possibility of going down another road. When you make a turn, you have a possibility of going down another road. So you're going off as a believer. I remember something I saw in my head. I was walking along this trail, And it veered off down into the trees and a nice little stream. And I'm figuring, oh, Lord, this is great. I just love walking with you. And there's this big mountain on the other side. And I saw myself leaning toward the trail. And him saying to me, where are you going? Going down the trail. We're going this way. What, over that mountain? No. Through it. Through it. Through it. We're such step-arounders. I just soon step around. Oh, no, thanks, Lord. That's too difficult for me. Really. Mm-mm. Obedience is obedience is obedience. We need to take heed concerning the wiles of the devil. Eve's response to forbidden fruit. Listen to this. Way back in Genesis. The woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree desirable to make one wise. Don't expect sin to look repulsive. Sin is not repulsive to the flesh. It's amazing. Ooh. And it's a steep road with a nasty, nasty cliff on it. When was the last time you had a really great idea and you engaged in that idea and it left you with an incident that you'll never forget? We've all got those. We've all got those. We must not assume that every great idea that comes into our head comes from God. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. You should walk with confidence and boldness, but not with arrogance and pride, as though God is impressed with your plan and might even desire to join you in it. So, people in general, all of us, we're not particularly bright. The devil is very crafty, and God alone is wise. That's what it is. Stay close to God. If you want wisdom, you have to stay close to God. We have to walk so closely to Jesus that we're found in the dust of His footsteps. And that's the only way you're going to experience the wisdom of God, because He doesn't throw it out there, and He's not about to make you or me wise. That would be a big mistake. Well, yeah, we're supposed to be wise. No, we're supposed to live in God's wisdom. And when you live in God's wisdom, you will exude God's wisdom. That's the only way it happens. If you look at, why would I talk that way? You look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 30. Christ has been made unto us wisdom from God. So if you live there, you'll experience His wisdom on a regular basis. If you don't, you won't. Here's a man. You know this. Myrna, you'll probably remember we went through this in Bible study a few years back. Studied the book of Ecclesiastes and Solomon. The book of Ecclesiastes is about the wisest man in the world who took control of the wisdom he had. And the book of Ecclesiastes will explain that to you. He said, everything is worthless. Everything is useless. Everything I try, everything I did, it comes to nothing. I should have been serving God. So the deal is, because we're in Christ, who's been made unto us wisdom, when you're living there, you're living in the wisdom. So you're not controlling the wisdom, but the wisdom, is controlling you. That's how it works. It won't work any other way. So you need to spend time in the Word. You need to spend time in prayer. You need to spend time in places like this, in joining others in worship and praise, so that the devil, who is after you to show you up, will be unable to, because the wisdom that possesses you refuses to allow it. That's how it works. And now that's a Christianity that will support you. You won't have to support it. You need to stay diligent in the things that you're doing in the Word and fellowship and stuff like that. But that will support you. Allow me to transition for a moment. Israel was given a promised land. They messed it up by not taking it and living in it on God's terms. That's basically what's happening here. Jesus has promised us and delivered us to His life, His abundant and promised life. Promised land, promised life. A lot of similarities. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 13 to 15. 2 Corinthians 11, 13 to 15. Addressing this idea of being wary and paying attention. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transformed himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. Some believers would say that Christians should always be a trusting people. I believe they should always be trustworthy people and a trusting person, in a sense, but only as much as the one they're trusting is trustworthy. Always prove the trustworthiness. You do not owe anything to an untrustworthy person. You need to be careful, cautious. Well, how do you do that and be gracious and kind? You don't have to be rude, but you just have to keep your wits about you. Too much work? Sometimes people fall asleep in the Christian life because it's too much work. They came to church for the wrong reason. I came to be fluffed up, padded up, made to feel this and feel that. You know when muscles build? Muscles don't build every time you put makeup on. Muscles don't build every time you're having a shower. There's no muscle building going on there. All the time you spend on a couch, your muscles are atrophying, not building. Muscle building happens, well, for me, outside, in the yard, in the forest. I come home from something like that, I need a shower. It's hard. It's messy. It's healthy. It's healthy. Want to stay healthy as a believer? We have here today a biblical example of how certain social graces can get one into a lot of trouble. And this is what they were doing. They wanted to be, good neighbors. Let's be good neighbors. I get that. Be good neighbors. But these people were already in God's will. These Gibeonites were already in God's will. Whatever chances they had, and I'm sure they had all kinds of them, just like anybody else, whatever chances they had, that time was up. That time was over. And so here they were. And Israel was going to be a part of God's will in their lives. But no, they decided to have a potluck and be friends, and it's so nice to do that. Am I saying don't love your enemies? No, I'm not. I'm saying recognize them, because now in the New Testament, our times are slightly different. We don't behave that way anymore. Because we'll take it on as making our lives comfortable and sweet and all the rest of it. No, we're out in the world, everywhere in the world, making disciples of the nation, of all the nations, loving our enemies. Christ has fulfilled the law. This was like a look into Judgment Day. So you have to take it in a word picture form. That was then, this is now. That's been fulfilled through Christ. And this is now. But perishing is still a very real possibility. Not if you're in Christ, but if you're fiddling around, pretending to be there and you're not, I can't guarantee anything in a life like that. Just a couple in closing here. Jesus said, "Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves." Matthew chapter 10, verse 16. I don't see the word gullible here. It's not in there. Psalm 20, verse 7 says, "Some trust in chariots, some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God." It's too bad if they could have just remembered that in that conversation they had. They would have been so much better off. Israel could have gone back. Before they made the covenant, when they just considered destroying all the rest of it, before they made the covenant, they should have just left it with, you know what? If you guys are, like they could have said, okay, let's have a meal. You're from so far away. Make them comfortable and everything, and then send them on their way and say, oh yeah, remember, if you live a long ways away, you're going to be fine. If you're actually our neighbors, sorry, we can't guarantee you that. They could have done it. Could have worked. But no, they had to get the big covenant thing. Who is the guy? Is it Gideon? You'll have to help me with this because they didn't research it. the Lord gave him the battle, and he made it. He was going to give it, this battle that he was in. He was going to get victory, but he made this promise that, Lord, I will sacrifice the first thing that comes out of my house when I come home. Who? Jephthah? Yeah. And the first one that came out of his house when he came home, his daughter. You don't need to add anything to the Word of God. You don't need to add this big, excited, I'm going to serve Jesus all my life. Yes, you should absolutely do that. But if you think yelling it louder than anybody else means you're going to do it better than anybody else, you're wrong. You couldn't be more wrong. Watch out. We can get excited. But the proof is in how we're actually doing with it. So they could have done that, but they chose not to. So the same scenario is back in Ai. The problem was the same as ours. Self-sufficiency. Psalm 18, verse 3, I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. We need to do that first, all the time. It's also another very good example of people serving God according to Christian principles without actually confirming it with God Himself. There's no relationship. There's just serving principles. Israel knew what the law of war was for the people in a far-off country, and they were motivated by what they understood in the law. I think that in the key phrase in this section is, but they did not ask counsel of the Lord. That's the key phrase. In the ministry, I try to go by this little phrase. I trust God to do His will. I trust God to help people do His will. I never trust anyone, myself included, to determine the will of God without first consulting God. You can get it wrong. You can absolutely get it wrong.